He was a young Norwegian carpenter with a penchant for making delightful toys. Little did he know that his trade would land him the career of a lifetime. But this story isn't all wrapped in fancy paper and bows.
I was 43 years old. I was only 4 feet 5 inches tall with a 68-inch waist. One day I stood in the mirror naked and I said, "God damn it, man, you're an elf! Now what are you gonna do with your life?"
But after this rocky start, the king of all mistletoe found his niche, bringing holiday joy to millions. But his rocket's led ride to the top was not without its dark side.
As God is my witness, I thought plastic bags were toys.
And just when it seemed that this master of Mary had it all came crashing down.
Remember that device that came out? That thing? They called it the It? Well, they should have called it sh-. I got 10,000 in a warehouse and I can't even give them away.
His life spinning out of control, this merry old soul finally hit Jingle Bell rock bottom.
So the next thing you know, I'm in a Motel 6 in Dubuque. Some strange girl in the shower and a beard full of dried vomit.
But when it seemed that there was no way out, an old friend appeared from nowhere to rescue the prodigal Père Noël, former presidential hopeful Al Gore.
Now I know what it's like to be a washed-up loser, someone who's irrelevant and completely without value to society. I know what it's like to have no one believe in you. So I figured, what the hell? I mean, I'm not doing anything, and I'm just growing this gut and this beard. Did you notice the beard? Tipper says it makes me look hard.
Revitalized and rejuvenated, this hirsute holiday handyman reclaimed his rightful place as the keeper of the Yuletide spirit and the man the whole world calls Father Christmas. Join us now as we explore the story of Santa Claus behind the Christmas.
Last time I played Father Christmas, I stood outside a department store. A gang of kids came over and mugged me and knocked my reindeer to the floor.
The story of Santa Claus begins here, in the tiny fishing town of Hundergloben, just a wink of an eye and a twist of the head from Oslo, Norway. It was in this tiny hamlet that Gunther and Consuelo Nicholas made their home, and where, on the first day of the winter solstice, they welcomed a bouncing baby boy. Inexplicably naming him after the milkman, Consuelo christened the boy Scout and set about providing all she could for him as he began his life.
We never had much money when I was young. I had no shoes, and I used to always complain until one day I passed a man with fake legs and real feet. And let me tell you, after that, I learned to count my blessings.
What the family did have was love.
They always made sure I had enough, even at Christmas time. I remember my father. One year he took odd jobs until he scraped together the money for a Christmas tree. It was the best holiday meal we ever had.
Scout's father made his life at sea, fishing with the other local men. He expected his son to follow in his footsteps, but Scout saw his destiny when he was about 9 years old.
So one night, I was putting ketchup on my tree, and I realized how well the red and the green went together. Well, I grabbed my mother's silverware, and I decorated up that tree to look all shiny and, well, you know, festive. And so the next day, after I desplintered my pants, I got to thinking, what if we had trees? Not for eating, but for decoration. And that was the beginnings of my life as Santa Claus.
Needless to say, Scout's parents weren't wild about him using the family's meager food supplies for decoration. Some sacrifices had to be made.
Rusty was a real good dog. Put a little relish on him. Can we turn the cameras off? Please. Turn them off.
As time went on, Scout became more and more serious about his new hobby. Creating decorations for the holiday season began to look like his calling. What Scout loved most of all was the joy his decorations brought others.
I think the best thing I ever invented was flocking. I mean, I would flock the tree, flock the neighbor's tree, flock the neighbor. Hell, sometimes I'd flock the neighbor's dog. I mean, I was one mean flocker. And when the look on their face right after they got flocked, you know, that makes it all worthwhile.
His Christmas inventions quickly caught on, and young Scout's innovations were all the rage, though some were more successful than others.
I had this idea to decorate the tree with fire. Yeah. That one didn't really go so well.
The following year, Scout's asbestos tree resulted in several lawsuits and reams of bad publicity. It would not be the young inventor's last brush with the dark side of success.
I had this other idea to put faces, you know, faces on squash and other Gore-type products. Yeah, you never think to trademark those things.
One Scout Nicholas item in particular seemed to strike a chord with the buying public.
One night, I was packing up my hide-a-bed when the whole bottom gave out. Springs went everywhere, all over the room, down the staircase. And then I noticed that springs could walk downstairs, alone, or in pairs. And they made this slinkety sound. And I thought to myself, a spring! A spring!
It was a marvelous thing, and soon the whole world would know it as Slinky.
And from that incident came the biggest selling product I'd ever had. And that's when I realized there's a lot more to Christmas than stringing your tree with pork chops and putting funny faces on potatoes. There's all kinds of dolls and trains and toys of every kind, just waiting to be made.
Scout's follow-up toys, the Slinky Dog and Slinky Train, met with similar success, although one item, the Slinky Cane, met with disappointing sales. But Scout turned those holiday lemons into financial eggnog.
Well, the settlements for the Slinky Cane almost put me under. So I knew whatever I came up with next had to be good. So if they don't want a cane made of flimsy metal, then what do they want? Well, what's something everybody likes? And I thought, candy.
Scout's moment of clarity reaped a financial windfall. The candy cane was an instant bestseller, showing Scout that there was an untapped market for his holiday gewgaws. It was time to take his dream to the world stage. Coming up, Scout finds success beyond his wildest dreams and temptations beyond his wildest imagination.
Oh, I don't know. I'd say about 4,600 women, sometimes two, maybe three at a time. A lot of the times they want me to stay in the suit. You know, for the whole thing. I've got the pictures in the book. You want to see them?
When Behind the Christmas continues. After years of struggle and financial heartbreak, 43-year-old Scout Nicholas of Hundergloben, Norway, was finally tasting success. His breakthrough product, the candy cane, had opened the doors to a worldwide market of sugar plums and sleds. But despite a booming professional career, his private life remained a desolate igloo of solitude.
I had one of those DSL connections, and I used to go into the chat room. I'd call myself Ramrod 69, but as soon as they find out you're an elf, it's all over. I'd say I didn't have a real date in 5 years.
But all that changed one cold New Year's Eve. Drunk and alone, bathed in the warm glow of the television, Scout was startled by a knock at the door.
I was watching Dick Clark introduce Kenny Rogers, and kind of idly wondering if a 12-gauge would take off my whole head. When I heard a knock at the door, I was gonna just ignore it, but whoever it was wasn't taking no for an answer.
Opening the door that cold and snowy night, Scout was greeted by the most beautiful woman he had ever seen. A woman who herself was looking for something special.
The St. Andrew's Spaghetti Feed. And between the snow and those Jaeger shots at the frat house, I didn't know where I was.
Scout was smitten.
She had all her teeth and no visible scars or prosthetic limbs.
And when he opened the door, I thought it was Sebastian Cabot. I still didn't know where I was, so I just asked if it was St. Andrew's. And he said...
I said, no, St. Andrew's gone, bowling. I'm St. Nicholas. And she bought it.
And that combination of hard liquor and blatant deception was the start of a lasting relationship. St. Nick had found his Mrs. Claus. After a whirlwind courtship, the couple tied the knot, honeymooning in Liechtenstein before making their home at Scout's new base of operations.
The North Pole thing was supposed to be a tax dodge. They told me if I put all my assets in the Arctic, the government couldn't touch it. Well, then my tax advisor got killed in a government standoff, so that didn't work out too well. I mean, did you know that everyone has to pay taxes? Anyway, turns out I have to live there. So here I am. I knew I should have gone to H&R Block.
His factory now ensconced in the tree-tinsel tundra of the North Pole, Scout turned his attention to marketing. The first change he made was a long time coming.
I was trying out a whole bunch of names that I thought would sound better. I mean, Scout made me sound like one of those Indians on the side of the road, always trying to sell you turquoise jewelry and reeking of gin. I wanted something that had a ring to it.
But finding just the right name proved to be a challenge.
I thought maybe Nicholas the Great or Scouty the Elf, D.B. Cooper. I mean, the list goes on. St. Nicholas was okay, but it cuts out the whole Jewish market, you know? And that's a pile of pastrami you don't want to lose.
It was a drunken and babbling Mrs. Claus who provided the answer.
Well, the sign painters were there, and they were doing the front of the factory. And I'm afraid I don't hold my arbor mist very well.
So when they asked her what name went on the sign, instead of St. Nicholas, it just came out... By the time I found out, it was too late to change the sign, so I was Santa Claus. Ho, ho, ho.
His new name in place, Santa began a full marketing assault on the Christmas world. His name and face appeared everywhere, from billboards to buses, and he became an icon to a world seeking holiday hope. Everyone, it seemed, wanted a piece of Santa. But keeping up with that demand proved a terrible strain.
I didn't know anything about physics or atmospheric re-entry burn. I mean, the first time out, we lost 7 of the 8 tiny reindeer. Why don't you try explaining to a 5-year-old at the mall why you reek of burnt reindeer hair?
The technical challenges were just one part of the burden. To make his overnight delivery deadline, Santa had little time to spare.
I mean, have you ever tried to visit 300,000 million homes in one night? The time zone changes alone put you over the edge.
Trying to meet the impossible deadline often took a physical toll, one that Santa Claus only now will talk about.
I've got piles. Yeah, they're bad. Boy, they itch. Well, you don't want to know about itching. And let me tell you something else. Bugs in the teeth. Not so much in North America, but in South America. They got mosquitoes the size of canned hams.
His physical ailments shielded from the public, Santa's business continued to boom. But with every new hung stocking, nervous collapse came closer to knocking. Santa fought back the symptoms with a rainbow of highly addictive medications.
See these? Vicodin, 7.0s. Take a few of these and you can fly through glass. Don't even feel it. And these, Paxil, they balance me out. Take a few of these, and when an elf comes to me with a problem, I say, hey, short round, don't sweat the small stuff.
But rectal swelling and psychotropic medication were only mile marker one on this toboggan ride to despair. Coming up...
I swear, I thought the gun was empty.
Santa's sleigh ride to hell continues. And later...
I mean, she didn't look 15, let me tell you.
When Behind the Christmas continues. Within a few years of launching his merry master plan on the world, Santa Claus had everything he'd ever dreamed. Money, fame, and the love of a beautiful woman. So great was his popularity that Coca-Cola signed him to a 5-year endorsement contract. But even this sweet deal had a bitter aftertaste for the Maven of Mistletoe.
Do you know that Coca-Cola doesn't have any cocaine in it? I mean, what am I drinking for? The taste? Boy, those guys could use a lesson in marketing. And did you know that you put a nail in a glass of Coke, in 3 days, you'll be gone.
The sour feelings over his Coca-Cola contract were a dark sign of things to come. In the years following his dazzling debut, a host of competing holidays had sprung up to siphon off their share of the December dollar.
Kwanzaa. First thing I heard about it, the wife says, turn on the TV and I see Felicia Rashad selling Kwanzaa cakes. What the hell is a Kwanzaa cake? And do they have Kwanzaa carols? Look, if there are no carols, it's not a holiday. Plain and simple. And Hanukkah, 8 days of presents? How do you compete with that?
To counteract this new holiday heyday, Santa Claus and wife Magdalena unveiled what they thought would be their salvation.
So we thought, why not have a second Christmas in July? Call it Christmas 2! I still think it was a good idea.
So then you start to hear the words sellout. And of course the media was just as cruel. That wrinkled bastard Paul Harvey, he's on the coal list for life. I'll tell you.
After suffering near-fatal heat stroke while delivering presents in a full Santa suit on the hottest day of the year, Christmas 2 was 86th, but the damage was done. Overextended and overexposed, Santa seemed destined for the pile of disposable heroes, like Dr. Laura. Putting his failed experiment on ice, Santa turned this minor setback into major catastrophe.
Did you know that drinking antifreeze will make you blind? Boy, I didn't see that coming.
Continuing his downward slide, Santa forgot about everything but killing the pain.
He'd vanish for days on end, and then you'd get the phone call, Santa's in our bathtub. Well, you can't imagine how embarrassing that was.
Along for this December deviance were a bevy of beautiful women, all of whom were more than happy to provide Santa with illicit Noel nookie.
I did my best to be a faithful husband, but I'm only human. One time I was in Salt Lake City. Well, I come down the chimney and there's a hot little tomato. The only thing she's got on is a mistletoe garter. Well, after a while, it all gets to be too much. You say to yourself, I'm Santa Claus. I deserve a little Yuletide fun now and then. I mean, when you stop by Halle Berry's house and she meets you with four handcuffs and a bottle of scotch, I mean, what's a man to do? Sometimes being naughty is just so damn enticing, even for Santa.
These nights of snow-covered sin left the married merrymaker full of self-loathing, a condition he cured the only way he knew how, through rampant intake of chemicals.
And you know, you tell yourself all kinds of lies when you're an alcoholic. You try to convince yourself that you're in control, but no matter what anyone tells you, vodka and trail mix is not a balanced way to live. I can see that now.
But the compulsive Kris Kringle's chaotic cannonball into the swimming pool of drugs and depravity was far from over. Depressed and alone, he wondered if he'd chosen the wrong path somewhere along the way.
I mean, you look at the little people in my life, and you see how their lives are, and you wonder, would I be happier? Billy Barty. Never heard one complaint out of him. And that other one, that black kid with the failing kidneys, he always seemed to have it pretty good.
But his Lilliputian longings aside, Santa showed no signs of slowing his ride along Route 666, even when his alcoholic intake led to some grave mistakes.
Did you know, I gave OJ a house 1 year. I swear to Christ, an honest-to-God house. Hell, there's kids in Armenia that'd be glad to get a lump of coal, and I gave OJ a friggin' house. Oh, the things I'd do over.
But at the height of his fame and the peak of his powers, there was no time for second guesses. Every moment spent awake was spent dealing with the stresses of fame, fortune, and the increasing expectations of stardom.
I mean, I get these letters from people who want me to give them world peace or love among all men for Christmas. I mean, why don't I just make the sun disappear? I'm not Doug Henning, you know. And don't even get me started on the lepers. Christ, you put on one big suit and a beard, and people think you're Jesus. I can't even fix my wife's gout, you know.
Santa's holly jolly party folly sometimes left him unable to handle the day-to-day tasks of mirth-making. As he was drawn deeper and deeper into a web of drunken irresponsibility, his management skills reached a nowhere nadir. Crucial decisions often had to be made by underlings, sometimes with disastrous consequences. Former head of Eltham Production and shop steward, Indigo Spitz.
You know, we elves are a punctual people. Now, people don't know that about us, but if there's one thing an elf won't tolerate, it's missing a deadline. When Christmas comes, them toys gotta be ready to roll. Period. And if old Jingle Junkie can't get it together enough to help us out, then we gotta do things ourselves. That's when I step in. Sure, I majored in communications, but when the chips are down and you gotta get them toys out, I'm your man.
Without Santa's holiday vision to guide them, the elves took it upon themselves to create and manufacture that year's holiday toys. It soon became apparent that their efforts, while sturdy and long-lasting, were not in keeping with the traditional spirit of the season.
Now what you got here is your sharp stick. I mean, the kids will love this one. I mean, what do you want from me anyway? It beats the hell out of that PlayStation if you ask me.
Equally bad was a mass marketing flyer, which, due to a printing error, told parents to bring their children to Satan's Workshop. The season was an unmitigated failure. Within a year, Spitz would leave the North Pole altogether, though to this day, he blames the man in red for the December debacle.
I did what I had to do. I made sure that every kid got a present. If they didn't want a beard of bees for Christmas, they can take it up with Betty.
His new friends in tow, Santa spent long hours in a haze of narcotic stupor. Magdalena Claus remembers the night she knew she'd had enough.
I just remember watching the American Music Awards. And there, in the front row, was my Santa. And with him was that no-good tramp, Courtney Love. Well, I thought he'd just gone out for a pack of smokes. And there he is with that yeasty whore. Well, at that moment, I knew that something had to change.
Coming up, Santa continues his never-ending slide into a pitiful chasm of blackness.
Who knew that Courtney would steal my songs and then dump me?
And later, Santa's snow globe of sadness becomes ho-ho happiness once again. When Behind the Christmas continues. After the bitter, soul-crushing failure of Christmas 2, Santa Claus had fallen further and further and further and further and further still into a nightmarish black abyss of drugs and kinky sex. The low point came in November when a home video showing Santa and girlfriend Courtney Love engaged in hardcore sex showed up on the internet. Despite a lengthy court battle, the video became an instant bestseller and cemented Santa's reputation as a man whose time had passed. His estranged wife continued to watch over the family business, convinced that a rebound was on the horizon.
I mean, we always had the company, and that kept us above water in the lean years, although we had to make some sacrifices. I mean, the 8 tiny reindeer had to go. We could only afford 2 huskies and a penguin.
But Lady Fate had one more shoe to drop. Klaus family lawyer Eli Zabransky.
The so-called merry working elves were in reality underfed school children from Nicaragua. And to make matters much worse, the rightful owners of these children, Nike Incorporated, hadn't been paid for them in years. So that had to come to an immediate stop.
The family business hobbled and his relationship on the rocks. Santa had nowhere left to turn. That's when a voice from the past emerged to lead Santa out of his private pain cave. Former Vice President Al Gore.
Now, Scout was always there for me, and when the chips were down, he was a true friend. I know that he loves Magdalena, and that all he needed was a helping hand to get back on his feet. You see how I used the hand and feet together there? You know, you got a couple bucks for some smokes?
Al found the floundering Father Christmas holed up in a cheap hotel, drinking away his last few dollars on cheap wine and memories.
He didn't look anything like the Scout I knew, He was pale and he smelled vaguely of Bengay and stool. Can I say stool? I guess it's better than saying shit, right?
Al convinced the Winter Wonder kind to clean up his act and to give Santahood another shot.
So I got up, cleaned the larger chunks out of my beard, and took a shower. And when I stepped out, I stood in the mirror naked and I said, God damn it, man. You're an elf. Now what are you gonna do with your life?
Coming up.
I mean, all it takes is one look at Al Gore and you realize the danger of ruining your whole life. I mean, Christ almighty.
When Behind the Christmas continues. The visit from the vanquished VP was just the catalyst Santa needed to set him back on the right path. With the help of friends and family, he slowly battled his way back from the brink of certain death. Fighting off the myriad demons of drugs, depression, and alcohol, he strove to rebuild his shattered life.
You see this? It's my 90-day coin. I'm a new person now. One who won't be tempted by drugs or booze or promiscuous. Are you going to drink that?
In his long and eventful life, Santa Claus has played many roles, from ecstatic elf to down-and-out December dreamer. But these days, the role that Saint Nick plays is that of contented family man, doting father, and successful business merchant. His life once again on the straight and narrow, he relishes every chance to share the holiday cheer he loves so much with those he considers his friends and neighbors, the good little boys and girls of planet Earth. As time went on, Santa reclaimed much of what he lost. His business, once faltering, now flourishes. And as for Mrs. Claus, she's just happy to have back the man she calls Saint Nick.
People always say, how did you do it? Why did you take him back? And I say, I did it for the children.
For the children, indeed. For without this General of Jolly, this Wizard of Winter, this Hero of Holly, this Mogul of Mary, this Titan of Tinsel, this Chancellor of Cheer, life would be just a little darker for the child in all of us. Good night, and Merry Christmas. Coming up, Al Gore asks if he gets paid for this.
Excuse me, do I get paid for this?
No.
When I was small, I believed in Santa Claus, though I knew it was my dad. And I would hang up my stocking at Christmas, open my presents, and I'd be glad. But the last time I played Father Christmas, I stood outside a department store. A gang of kids came. Machine gun, so I can scare all the kids on the street.
time. But remember the kids who got nothing while you're drinking down your wine. Christmas, please hand it over. We'll beat you up, so don't make us annoyed.